97.3 FM, Peaceworks Community Radio in Eugene, Oregon, and streaming online at www.kepw.org.
The show's Talk is Cheap. Sorry, just checking my levels here. We have a new mixing board, so hope they're not too high. They look okay from here. All right, so today I just came back from vacation, and I flew. The airline shall remain nameless, but they switched my flight twice. I switched it. They put me on a MAX 9, so I didn't want to fly on the MAX 9 yet. So I tried to switch that out, and they put me on a MAX 9 anyway. So I wasn't too happy about that, but I made it. So whenever I go, I try not to fly, but in this case, I just had to. Incidentally, I went down to Mexico to get some dental work done. And, you know, I just a little commentary here. In the 80s, you could cross the border and get back. There'd be maybe a dozen, less than a dozen people coming back. Now it's a two-hour wait to get into the United States. What's the difference? What's the difference? In my opinion, it's NAFTA and CAFTA and globalization is the difference, is why there's people coming in, why there's a big line. And I have a little bit of personal experience with this, of why there is a huge line coming back into the United States. It's globalization and neoliberalism. Okay, so today I always pick up a Financial Times when I go through the airport, because that's one of the few places you can get the Financial Times. It's a newspaper that's fairly unbiased. It's privately owned. The Wall Street Journal used to be owned by the Dow Jones Company, but now is owned by Murdoch. So it has not been too great lately. And you want the reason you want a financial paper is because financial papers tend to be accurate, because you need accurate information whether you believe in capitalism or business or not, whether you believe in that or not. You need accurate information if you're a businessman. So usually the financial papers are fairly accurate, and especially the Financial Times, like I say, is independently owned and one of the best. The little pink paper that people don't know about. So I'm going to be reading you a couple articles from that. Hate to read you copy, but it's good stuff. And I want to support the Financial Times. So here on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene, Oregon, Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, also streaming online at kepw.org. Support independent media. Coming up, stuff from the Financial Times of London and a few more surprises. Okay, so like I said, so good news, there is a ceasefire in the Middle East. So this was written on, this is from the Financial Times of Friday, May 21st. So this must have been written the day before, and the ceasefire apparently happened on the 21st. So this is titled, Biden's Old Ties with Netanyahu Bring Hope of Ending Middle East Conflict. bond between President and PM harks back to 1980s when Israeli leader was diplomat in Washington. This is by Katrina Manson and Mehul Srivastava from the Financial Times of Friday, May 21st, 2021. When Israeli Premier Benjamin Netanyahu took up a job in the private sector on being voted out of office in 1999, one 56-year-old U.S. senator kept in touch. The senator was Joe Biden, and the correspondence helped sustain ties that have lasted for years. As president of the U.S., Israel's main ally, he is in a stronger position than any other foreign leader to influence the course of this month's deadly resurgence of fighting between Israel and the Palestinian militant group, Hamas, in the Gaza Strip. After initially endorsing airstrikes by Washington's closest regional ally, Biden has begun to toughen his line during regular calls with Netanyahu as attacks continued into a second week. While speculation grew yesterday that a ceasefire could be agreed in the coming days, Israel continued to launch strikes against Hamas. After Biden told Netanyahu on Wednesday that he expected de-escalation, the Israeli prime minister said he was determined to continue this operation until its aim is met. Biden is now facing a mounting political backlash at home as the death toll rises, including accusations from some in his own Democratic Party that he is enabling Netanyahu. After Biden took office, there was much speculation about whether he would take a tougher stance toward Israel than predecessor Donald Trump, who pursued unabashedly pro-Israel Israeli policies, infuriating and sidelining the Palestinians as he upended years of U.S. convention and developed a cozy relationship with Netanyahu. Biden has recalled first becoming, quote, close friends with Netanyahu in 1982 when he was posted to Washington as an Israeli diplomat. In those early days, Biden even signed a picture for the young Netanyahu with the words, "Bibi, I don't agree with a damn thing you say, but I love you." During the Obama administration, a fractious period for U.S.-Israeli relations, Biden, the U.S. vice president, was called in to smooth over ruptures, said Dennis Ross, a former Middle East negotiator. In 2010, after Israel infuriated the White House with its plan to expand its settlements program in the occupied West Bank, Ross said he heard Biden speak to Netanyahu with an easy familiarity. Yet in 2015, during another period of friction over Iran policy, Biden conspicuously failed to attend an address Netanyahu gave to a joint session of U.S. Congress. Michael Oren, former Israeli ambassador to the U.S. during the Obama administration, said the pair had a rapport and could talk candidly to one another, but he warned against overstating their warmth. "It's not that they were drinking buddies. They saw each other occasionally and had a cordial, good relationship," he said. Some observers suggest that Biden's connection allows him to deliver blunt messages with a soft edge. Biden is willing to push harder with those he already has a relationship, Ross said. Robert Satloff, executive director of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, a think tank, said Biden had seen how putting pressure on Netanyahu in public could backfire. Barack Obama's decision to press for a ceasefire early and publicly during a similar 2014 conflict between Israel and Hamas quickly made him an irrelevant factor. And the war continued for 52 days with more than 2,000 Palestinians and 73 Israelis dead, he said. The Biden administration has several times blocked statements from the UN Security Council about this month's violence. Some analysts argue the fact that Israel has continued with airstrikes gives little indication that Biden has privately leaned on Netanyahu to stop. Biden visited Israel a few months after becoming U.S. Senator in 1973, meeting Golda Meir, the Prime Minister, on the eve of the Yom Kippur War in what he has described as one of the most consequential meetings of his life. He recalled her saying that Israelis had a secret weapon in their conflict with the Arabs. We have nowhere else to go. Aaron David Miller, a former Arab-Israeli negotiator in several U.S. administrations, said Biden's support for Israel was unwavering, but his relationship to Netanyahu was between one politician and another. They don't trust each other, Miller said. Biden is very much aware that Netanyahu is a politician, that his primary objective is to maintain himself in power. For his part, Netanyahu also understands Biden cannot afford to overlook powerful domestic policies in the U.S., according to analysts based in Washington. This week, he expressed support for a ceasefire and immediate de-escalation after receiving criticism from progressive Democrats and some in the pro-Israeli lobby in the U.S. Although Israel still draws strong bipartisan support in the U.S., a quarter of Americans now sympathize more with Palestinians than Israelis, up from 16% in 2001, according to Gallup. A third of Democrats in 2008 thought the U.S. should pressure Israelis to make compromises rather than the Palestinians, but now that figure is 53%. Biden has begun to acknowledge losses suffered by Palestinians. On Tuesday, he told Rashida Tlaib, a progressive congresswoman and critic of his policies on Israel, that he admired her concern for others and would keep her family in the West Bank safe. However, Satloff argued Biden's publicly supportive approach to Israel was more likely to bring an end to fighting. My sense is that having that position has provided the administration with more standing to be effective in bringing about a halt to the conflict, he said. Whether it's going to happen tomorrow or this hour or that hour, it's not going to be 52 days long. So, good news. And so what this article is saying is that by being nice to Israel, he can Biden can get more done in negotiations with Israel. So anyway, so this is something I wanted to play. So I found out The Who did play The Punk Meets the Godfather back in 73. I just didn't have... Most of the music I have is from my own collection. You can also get it on Dime a Dozen, it's called. And some of it was recorded by yours truly, so you can't get it anywhere. But, they did play The Punk Meets the Godfather in 73. And last week, or a couple weeks ago, I was saying how you can tell the difference between Kenny Jones, the drummer that replaced Keith Moon, and this has Keith Moon on it, so you'll see the difference. Kenny Jones was barely keeping up with the rest of the band. In fact, the band is sitting there waiting for him. You can tell, like, Entwistle is throwing in a few extra riffs there because they're waiting for the drummer. And please, ask a musician about this. I'm not a musician, so you can ask musicians about how... Kenny Jones is a good drummer, but nowhere near... You can see what a great drummer Keith Moon is. So this is The Punk Meets the Godfather. And also, I didn't play the intro to I Am One, so I'm going to play that for you too, because John Entwistle, Pete Townsend, who is basically The Who, says some interesting stuff about being a loser. All right, and then more from the Financial Times and a couple other surprises for you. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media in all its forms. It's the only place you're going to get some semblance of the truth.
Oh, sung a song called I'm One What I Sing, and it's all about the way I felt, because I wrote it. Yeah, thank you. And when I was in ITMA, I always used to feel that the guitar was all I had. I could have been right, of course. And that I wasn't tough enough to be a member of the gang, not good looking enough to be in with the birds, not clever enough to make it at school, not good enough for the feet to make a good football player. I was a loser. And I think everybody feels that way at some point. And somehow being a monkey, even though I was too old to be a mod, really. Kind of got me right there. I wrote this song with that in mind. Jimmy, the hero of the story, is kind of thinking he hasn't got much going for himself, but at least he's one.
All right, sorry, that was a little messed up there. Okay, so, yeah, just, I forgot to tell you, so the stories I'm working on, too, next week I'll be playing, I did an interview with the Green Hill, Humane Society out there in West Eugene, and, they're doing some great stuff. I mean, it's a lot of progress in animal, welfare, and, you know, you don't have to just release your pet into the wild. They're not going to kill your pet if you bring it to the Humane Society. They're going to find somebody for it. So don't just drop your pet off. Don't just let your pet go because you've had problems in your life. Bring it to the Humane Society. They assure me they are not going to kill your animal. It's not like the old days. They don't have a death row at the Humane Society anymore, unless your animal is a vicious, diseased old yeller. They're not going to shoot it. So, yeah, Green Hill next week. Tune in for that. I'll be playing some stuff from Citizens Climate Lobby about we need to cut carbon emissions. And the way to do that, I think, is to tax carbon. You want to tax things that you want to stop and use that money to encourage things that you want to encourage. That's what a capitalist society does. That's Keynesian economics. So I'll be playing a lot of stuff from Citizens Climate Lobby. I have a piece from the South Central Farm that from 20 years ago that deals with land reform and what, you know, we need city farming. And how they took that away from land speculators and the South Central Farm. So that's coming up over the next few weeks, and all kinds of other looking for interviews for you, and all kinds of other wacky stuff. Don't forget to check out our newscast. We're now taking my stories and editing them down for the news. I hope to be doing more of that in the future here when I retire from my indentured servitude. Okay, so this is, again, from the Financial Times of Friday, May 21st. The new media, and what this is about is, I have another article that is related to this from the Americans for Tax Fairness. This is why we need to tax corporations and, again, use the money to encourage things that when we want to retool and change society. We take money from the rich, and we put it over here to do to things that we want to encourage. So, whether you believe in capitalism or not, there is no monopolies in capitalism. That's what a laissez-faire government is supposed to do, is maintain commerce by breaking up monopolies. So, and this is also my thing. I am a free speech advocate. I think you should never, anytime someone's telling you what to say, I have a problem with that. There's a problem. So telling Amazon and Facebook and them what to say, this is a problem. And the reason I have to agree that these are with who I think, maybe I'm agreeing with Trump on this, I don't know. I don't think he's quite saying it quite the same way, but you have to break up these large companies. No one should have. Why does Facebook own Instagram? What? Why was that allowed to happen? So Amazon. This is about Amazon buying up the Hollywood studio, the MGM catalog. So we're all going to be buying our entertainment from one company, and as it is, we're paying too much for cable and entertainment anyway. So what is this obvious to me that these companies are way too big. So, and this other story on from American Tax Fairness, I'm going to tie it all together. Okay, so the news media's world streams lead to Amazon. The new media world's streams. The new media world's streams lead to Amazon. Two proposed deals sum up the changing entertainment landscape. James Bond has encountered media titans hell-bent on world domination before. Amazon's desire to buy MGM, the maker of the 007 franchise, and the last Hollywood studio to be snapped up, should then be familiar territory. In fact, it's emblematic of an entertainment landscape that is shifting profoundly. Amazon's MGM talks were revealed shortly after AT&T confirmed it was selling Warner Media, itself home to a storied studio, to Discovery, a maker of reality television programs. Each deal gives its own answer to the question of when it makes sense to integrate distribution with content and when not. Amazon's seems to be the better response. The shakeup is testament to Wall Street's enduring love affair with streaming generally, and Netflix in particular, even if the company's new subscriber numbers are slowing. The pandemic accelerated trends already in evidence. Studios face difficulties as cinemas remain largely shut and more of a stay-home and stream content. Meanwhile, Amazon has profited from the pandemic. Its Prime service has 200 million members. It is not clear how many actually stream to rival Netflix's 208 million. Amazon is constantly trying to expand its customer base, inciting those customers to spend more by staying longer on its platform. Galvanizing Prime's offering through the back catalog MGM brings, therefore, makes sense. It is unclear whether more Prime subscribers lured, say, by James Bond, the evil media tycoon, is found in Tomorrow Never Dies, incidentally. In other words, Amazon is in Tomorrow Never Dies. Translates to more purchases for next day deliveries of toilet roll. So you're going to the more you watch on TV, the more things you're going to buy. Who knew? AT&T's retreat is an indictment of the telecom giant's $85 billion bet on entertainment when it acquired Time Warner less than 3 years ago after a run-in with the U.S. Department of Justice. The planned disposal eases AT&T's $150 billion debt pile and leaves it better positioned for a parallel gold rush, that of 5G and fiber broadband. Providing the plumbing to entertainment companies makes better sense for AT&T than trying to be an entertainment company ever did. Shareholders deserve focus after years of confused strategy and eroded value. Competition for content should result in better customer choice, at least initially. The fear is entertainment is becoming a market where size matters more than anything else. Consumers could end up paying the price as a captive audience subject to fee hikes. U.S. audiences used to paying an average of $200 a month for cable television may not be that concern, but the true exchange is personal data bartered for convenience in a world where big tech increasingly pervades our lives. That leaves questions for advertisers and regulators. More streaming services mean fewer eyeballs on advertisements. Advertisers must work out new ways of reaching those audiences. Big tech, once established in a market, has shown itself to be adept in accommodating advertisers and not necessarily in the most transparent of ways. And so to regulators, the deals may not be problematic from a traditional antitrust perspective, but they come as politicians on both sides demand better oversight of big tech. And as the DOJ's Antitrust Division and Federal Trade Commission are due new leadership. President Joe Biden's FTC nominee is Lina Khan, a vocal critic of big tech, whose 2017 student article on Amazon examined whether existing U.S. antitrust laws focusing on what customers pay ignore potential anti-competitive behavior in digital markets. EU watchdogs take a more expansive view. Should regulators' interest be piqued by these new media deals, that will be worth tuning in for. Okay, so having read that, like I say, and this show, that's partly what this show is about, is, corporations. I've not found it's usually a corporation that's causing the problem. Very rarely do I find a reason for a corporation, and they're supposed to serve the public, even though they don't, they only pay lip service to their corporate charters. A cousin of mine is a corporate lawyer, and he says, corporate charter is just a formality that they sign in a stack of papers when they incorporate. All right, so this is from Americans for Tax Fairness. At $4 trillion, the total wealth of all U.S. billionaires today is nearly double the $2.1 trillion in total wealth held by the bottom half of the population, or 165 million Americans. Quote, never before has America seen such an accumulation of wealth in so few hands, said Frank Clemente, executive director of Americans for Tax Fairness. As tens of millions of Americans suffer from the health and economic ravages of this pandemic, a few hundred billionaires add to their massive fortunes. Their pandemic profits are so immense that America's billionaires could pay for a major COVID relief bill and still not lose a dime of their pre-virus riches. Their wealth growth is so great that they alone could provide a $3,000 stimulus payment to every man, woman, and child in the country and still be richer than they were 9 months ago. Joe Biden won a tax fairness mandate in November. We look forward to working with him in Congress to deliver on that mandate by taxing the massive wealth of these billionaires. The updraft of wealth to the billionaire class is disturbing at a time when millions face eviction, destitution, and loss, said Chuck Collins of the Institute for Policy Studies and co-author of Billionaire Bonanza 2020. A report looking at pandemic profiteering and billionaire wealth. Billionaires are extracting wealth at a time when essential workers are pushed in the viral line of fire. All right, so this is me that's talking. The reason I'm reading this article is I've heard, too, that this stimulus package goes straight into the hands of these billionaires. And the even Chris Hedges is saying, too, and others are saying that all the infrastructure bill, all this tax dollars will go straight into the wealthiest top 100%. So this is the justification for taxing these people, even in a capitalist society. I'm sorry, you tax people and put the money in at the bottom. And unfortunately, it ends up back in their hands anyway, but at least we get something done in the process. All right, so, it's disgraceful.
Thanks for listening. Tell your
EPW, LP, 97.3 FM, Eugene, Oregon, Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. Also streaming online at kepw.org. All right, the show's talk is cheap. I'm your host, DJ SSD. Here's one more from the, some good news from the Financial Times of London, a nearly unbiased paper. So, the Green Party, they're taking over. And I've heard them say, too, that the Republicans are all split up. We might get two parties out of the Republican Party, too. And hopefully the Democrats, maybe we'll split them up, too. All right, so this is from candidates to succeed Merkel clash in first televised debate by Erica Solomon. In Berlin, from the Financial Times of London, from May 21st. The electoral battle to replace Angela Merkel as chancellor heated up in Germany's first televised debate, showcasing growing tensions between the two frontrunners, the Christian Democrats, Germany's long-standing political power, and the up-and-coming Greens. Occasional sparring between Armin Laschet, nominee of Merkel's Christian Democrats, or the CDU, and Annalena Baerbock, the Greens' first chancellor candidate, was perhaps the most notable part of yesterday's Europe Forum debate hosted by German broadcaster WDR. The program, which included the Social Democrats' Olaf Scholz, is the first of three televised debates. Although the candidates differed over NATO budget commitments and the Nord Stream gas pipeline, It broke little new political ground and was dubbed a snooze summit by Germany's leading tabloid Bild. Germany has a parliamentary vote in September that marks the end of Merkel's 16 years at the helm. Her party's historic dominance faces a serious challenge from the Greens, who aim to seize the chancellery for the first time. The Greens soared in the polls last month after Baerbock announced her candidacy. But the CDU has regained ground in recent weeks. The parties are now neck and neck in the polls, 4 months ahead of the vote. Three candidates started off the debate mostly in agreement. All said Europe's most important foreign partnership was with the U.S. and expressed similar frustrations with the EU's bureaucracy and sluggishness. Baerbock dominated the speaking time and shaped much of the debate with her talking points, a stance reflecting the growing impact the Green Party is having on political debate. She was the only one to criticize Germany's commitment to NATO, which requires spending nearly 2% of its budget on defense, calling the goal absurd. She argued that just as Washington was reassessing, and of course they buy those, this is me talking, they buy those weapons from the U.S., our biggest export. She argued that just as Washington was reassessing its priorities on climate change and infrastructure under President Joe Biden, Germany could offer other types of defense to Washington, such as cybersecurity. She also opposed Germany's nuclear sharing agreement, through which it hosts some U.S. nuclear weapons as part of NATO's deterrence policy. Yet it hosts nuclear weapons. In other words, they've got nuclear weapons pointed at the enemy from Germany. Laschet, who alongside Scholz vowed to continue Germany's gradual increase in its defense budget to reach the 2% goal, accused Baerbock of beating around the bush, saying, "If you're a German chancellor candidate, you can say I stand by what countries have agreed internationally, or you can say I want to get away from it." Scholz, who is, according to some polls, the most popular politician of the three, gave a cool and collected performance. He gestured to his popular financial rescue packages during the pandemic, as finance minister of Merkel's current coalition government. He and Laschet also held nearly identical views on one of the most contentious matters in the Germany-U.S. relationship, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline project that will bring more Russian gas to Europe. The Biden administration said on Wednesday it would waive some of the most hard-hitting sanctions against the project in order to improve relationships with Berlin. Washington remains deeply opposed to the project, which it argues exposes Europe to more pressure from the Kremlin. There is a misconception in the United States that we are very dependent on this Russian gas, said Scholz. Now, just as an aside, my own commentary, my own observation is, could this be why we are criticizing Russia so much, is because they're selling gas to Europe instead of us they're moving in on our action. Could it be that they're moving in on our action? Okay, so, yeah, that's all I got for you. Sorry to read copy to you. Like I say, next week, great interview. I got a tour of Green Hill Humane Society. Support Green Hill Humane Society. Support independent media. Let's see. Here's a couple of things that I've done myself. Where did those go? All right, well, I just recorded this. Let's see what you think about this. Brought to you by Crazy Larry MD's Procedure Emporium, where they're crazy for your health care. Hi, I'm Crazy Larry MD from Crazy Larry MD's Procedure Emporium, where we're crazy for your health care. We guarantee to charge you only 100% of what your insurance pays after they pay it, or whatever's higher, with approved collateral. Come on down, we'll give you a free ride in my Bugatti. Our internationally sought surgeon will have you for dinner once you pay your bill. Free vasectomy by Rabbi Cutswell with every operation. This week's special, open heart surgery, just $50,000, sutures not included. At Crazy Larry MD's, call for the latest location. I'm crazy for your health care. Brought to you by Gluteus Maximus Excon Cranium. Do you still think women and people of color are inferior? Do you think corporations care about people and the environment? Do you think George Bush doesn't know the lyrics to the Horse Vessel song? You may be suffering from terminal ignorance. Made from 100% Amanita mushrooms, Gluteus Maximus Excon Cranium actually removes the brain plaque associated with terminal ignorance. Pick up some today before it's too late. Side effects are compassion, forgiveness, and hysterical laughter. Brought to you by Silt River Tree Museum and Casino. Built on the site where an actual ancient rainforest once stood, see a full-scale replica of a Douglas fir tree. See pictures of trees larger in diameter than a man is tall. Trout and salmon that once choked the rivers of the Northwest will sing to you in our chamber of taxidermy. Hear the disaffected sounds of Feller Buncher and his bunch of fellers, an all-ex-logger band, in our simulated wood amphitheater. Take the Oregon Desert Highway to the clear-cut road exit, turn right at the stump in the road, and you're at Silt River Tree Museum and Casino. Free parking, kids a buck and a half, closed during summer months due to melting asphalt, giant locusts, and methyl ethyl hydroxy colchicine slag emissions. All right, KEPW, LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. Don't forget to check out our newscast, our weekly newscast, and Sam Broadway is doing some great stuff. Tomorrow is Dr. Zoom. We'll play you some incredible music that you've never heard of, the most incredible music you've ever heard. I'm told that he emits guitar solos from his wrists. So, yeah, check that out. To the Moon and Back is a show that happens before mine on Saturdays. What else? Yeah, come on down and volunteer. Send us money. We need your support. The project's taking off. I hear we've got a lot more listeners, and this is the type of thing that you need during a pandemic: is a community radio station that is supported and is staffed by the community it serves. All right, thanks for listening. Tell your friends.
Flesh and steel, I want. Driving in the car. sun, tomorrow's rain, and wash the sins away. But something in my mind will always stay. Perhaps this final act was meant to clinch a lifetime's argument. That nothing comes from violence, and nothing of a court. For all those born beneath an angry star, lest we forget how fragile we are.
Brought to you by Gluteus Maximus X Concranium. Do you still think women and people of color are inferior? Do you think corporations care about people and the environment? Do you think George Bush doesn't know the lyrics to the Horse Vessel song? You may be suffering from terminal ignorance made from 100% Amanita mushrooms. Gluteus Maximus X Concranium actually removes the brain plaque associated with terminal ignorance. Pick up some today before it's too late. Side effects are compassion, forgiveness, and hysterical laughter.
Statements or show topics are not necessarily the views or opinions of the KEPW website or the radio station.
Are proud to announce our fabulous local business, where we do all of our local grocery shopping, Sundance Natural Foods, as an underwriter for KEPW. Thank you, Sundance, for supporting quality national programming and local voices on the air at 97.3 FM and simulcasting on www.kepw.org.
KEPW LP 97.3 FM Community Radio and its owners and associates take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by talk show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the views or opinions of the KEPW website or the radio station.
Hello, everybody.
You are listening to KEPW LP 97.3 FM in Eugene, Oregon. Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. Also streaming online at KEPW.org. Please check us out. Hello. Welcome to the Moon and Back Remedies. I am your host, Elle, and it is such a pleasure to be with you guys today. I have had such a crazy whirlwind of a few months. I bet everyone else has too. It's been unbelievable. First, before I get started, the name of my show is To the Moon and Back Remedies. I talk about local music, amazing hosts, artists, all your favorites. We have amazing podcasts and Black Girl from Eugene, Mama's Just Saying, Story Time on 8 p.m. on Wednesday nights with Simone Hot Mama. And also, we have Jana Thrift with Water is Life and Legalized Survival. You guys must check us out. Get involved in your local community radio station. Shout out to Damien, who is the most amazing kid in the world I've ever met. He laughed me saying kid, but without that man, I wouldn't have been able to get this show done today. Me, a nonstop, busy, full-time mommy with PTSD, half-deaf, blues singer. Shout out to Old Nick's downtown in Whittaker.
The Music Education Performing Arts Association is proud to host a month-long Kids Rock Music and Arts Festival coming up in May. They will be highlighting the artistic talents of youth in the Eugene Springfield community, as well as...
You're listening to KEPWLP 97.3 FM from Eugene, Oregon.
If you live in or manage an apartment complex or other multifamily property and you want to recycle better, check out the free resources and guides at lanecounty.org/multifamilyrecycling. Clear instructions